so good at makeup and funky clothes. Oh, pero claro, I wish you would straighten your hair more, but I also understand your style doesn't have to be my own. I have my fingerprints all over you, and I don't need the world to see them to know that they're there. Although mommy is dead ass serious that she isn't going to the DR funeral, she is the one who visits the morgue when we are given custody of what is left of Papi's body. She is the one who decides what to do with the remains, who takes Papi's favorite navy blue suit to the mortician. She is the one who comes home ashy gray in the face, who does not describe what the leftovers look like, only hugs me to her. She is the one who says, "Thank goodness for that damn gold tooth." She is the one who calls the Dominican Republic and says, "It needs to be a closed casket. Whatever you do, don't let the girl see what is left." And I know she means camino, means to spare her. I don't understand my parents' kind of love and hate, what it must take for mommy to lose him all over. But I know she must have love for him, right? She is so, so tender when she irons and folds the purple pocket square that will go inside his grave. Papi will have two funerals. Papi will have two ceremonies. Papi will be mourned in two countries. Papi will be said goodbye to here and there. Papi had two lives. Papi has two daughters. Papi was a man split in two, playing a game against himself. But the problem with that is that in order to win, you also always lose. All I want is my father back. I want his heavy footsteps to tread outside my door. I want his stupid sayings and his angry bellow and rapid Spanish and his eyes that misted over when his favorite song played. There are pieces of him all over the house, all over New York City, and beyond that to the island, but I can't bundle them together to make anything, anyone resembling him.
Camino. 45 days after. The school year ended weeks ago. I've hidden three bills the school sent beneath a candle Tia never moves. I'm hoping the saints will step in. I don't know how I'll pay for it, but my sister and her mother are rich, and damn if they don't owe me something. I just hope Tia doesn't find the bills first. In a week and some change, July 29, I will turn 17, the same day my father's remains will be buried. I don't know if my sister knows. That day is my birthday, and I don't tell her. At the beach, I swim until I hit the resort buoys, then swim back, and mostly ignore Edsero watching from the waterbank. He's started taking out his phone and recording me on the beach. I do not want to think what he does with these videos. I help Tia with her rounds of the neighborhood. We visit the lady with cancer and wipe her brow. I sit with Carlene and her baby. I count down the days to the end of July. 46 days after. 4 days before my sister is supposed to arrive, I finally get my nerve up. I call her after dinner. She answers with a smile. I know it will not last. I won't tell you any details about the funeral unless you transfer me money. You'll show up for nothing. My tia won't help you sneak over here. I don't want to be brisk. It almost hurts me to look into her wide, soft eyes and ask for so, so much. But her softness has nothing to do with the desperation I feel growing inside me. After Papi's burial, I will have to leave this place. There is nothing for me in this town where I see my exit doors growing smaller. My words, weighed down, become an avalanche. In the blink of a second, Yahaira's face goes blank. She leans back in her seat. Of course. It's your money, too. You didn't have to threaten me to ask for it. We have gotten the advance in full, but how much would you like me to transfer? I don't know if it's her cool tone or my guilt that causes me to flinch. She can say whatever she wants, but no one gives you something simply for asking. Life is an exchange. You'd think a chess player would know that. 10,000. You can keep everything else. I swallow back the bile that rises in my mouth. I will make it alone on my own 2 feet. I give Yahaira the information to wire cash. She promises to do it this week. I hang up the phone without saying goodbye. It seems easiest not to get attached to this sister. To not give her a single reason to get attached to me. Yahaira sends me the money and her flight plans. She bought the flight with a credit card that her mother doesn't check. She asks if I can pick her up from the airport, and I want to ask her what car she thinks I have, or maybe she imagines, like a mule, I will sling her across my back. I may be a pobrecita right now, but I am no one's errand girl. Perhaps she thinks she's bought my compliance. Perhaps that's what I implied, but I am annoyed to be treated like a servant girl. All that money and she can't just order a taxi? But honestly, the taxi drivers are thieves. And what if something happened to her? A gringuita alone, tia would kill me. My father's ghost would probably haunt me. My guilt for sure would. I already feel horrible about the money that was transferred to Western Union. I picked up the fat envelope yesterday and taped it to Papi's picture on tia's altar in the living room. So I tell her I will be at the airport. I don't tell her I'm unsure how I'll be getting there. Is this what sisterhood is? A negotiation of the things you make possible out of impossible requests?
Yahaira. Mommy won't let me see the real remains. The airline representative mails us a catalog of all the bits of cloth and bone and hair and suitcase things that probably belonged to my father. I stare at the photos, all the bits and pieces that will be buried of Papi. And I think about everything my father left behind that won't be in that box, the swollen questions that are bursting the seams of our lives, the huge absence that stretches over every waking moment. The disrepaired, the broken that fell apart long before his plane did. I look at the scraps of a body they have piled into a casket and called a man. I know the remains are strewn around us in this everyday life of the leftover. 49 days after. Before Papi is shipped to DR, Mommy decides we need to hold a wake. The funeral parlor that will ship his body prepares for the event. No viewing. Although Tio Jorge seems upset with Mommy for how she spoke to him last time, he picks us up for the wake. When he opens the car door for me, he grabs me up in a tight, tight hug. I find it hard to look at him, to smell his scent. Sometimes, if I let myself forget my father is dead, I can look at Tio Jorge and see him here, standing before me, looking so much like my father. Tears are gathered in his eyes and in his choked voice. He waves a hand in front of his face as if it will clear both. He tells me, I love you, Yaya, Bella Negra. I bury my face in his neck and to myself I whisper, Bella Negra, Papi's right here. He's with us. Papi was embalmed in sea salt, like an ancient insect caught in honey, unmoving, from a different time. Bobby was always in motion, his smile bursting forth, bursting the way my heart feels when I kneel at his casket. And every big emotion inside me makes my chest shake. But I blink away tears, and I throw my shoulders back. Never let them see you sweat. And even if you have to forfeit, smile. As Mommy and I sit in the front row, people come up to us to pay their respects. Such a funny phrase. Pay respects. As if suffering is a debt that can be eased by a hug and a head nod. I have no need for this currency of people's respect. My cousins shuffle awkwardly from foot to foot. Dre, with Dr. Johnson beside her, sits behind me, her hands in her lap, ready to jump to my rescue. Wilson stands with his fiancée in the back of the funeral parlor, his big hands full of white carnations. I cannot fold any of their respects into my dress's pockets. I cannot tie these respects together into a bouquet to lay at my father's headstone. Their respects are quick-footed, and I am sludging through this hardened mud of loss. Wilson is wearing a black button-down and slacks, and on a different day, I would joke that he looks like he's going to a job interview. But today, my father is dead. His body that held so much noise is in a box, and so I don't diss Wilson. I don't reach for his hand. I give him a small smile and sit with my mother. Bobby always liked Wilson, and I wonder, would he have been upset Wilson asked for money? I'm not sure he would have been. He was a generous man. I wonder if maybe I should be less angry about something neither one of my parents would have been angry about. But I don't know. I could always anticipate Bobby's moves. His every feeling flashed across his face like the digital ads at the bus stops. For the rest of my life, I will sit and imagine what my father would say in any given moment, and I will make him up. His words, his advice, our memories. Tomorrow morning, the funeral director will ship the body out to DR. Ship the body. As if it is an Amazon order of toilet paper or textbooks. People come and people leave, but Dre stays until the very end, presses drooping carnations into my hands, and I know she bought them outside the train station and carried them through rush hour and bus transfers and a walk to give them to me. I just wanted you to have something. And the knot in my throat swells to twice its size, my tongue bloated and still in the coffin of my mouth. I nod and take them from her. She gives my shoulder a small squeeze. They are beautiful. I love them. I love you. You are the only thing that does not hurt. I try to say with my eyes, since I can't get my mouth to make a single sound. I don't want to tell Dre I am accompanying my father's body, but since I can't keep a single secret from her, I blurt it out anyway, and then ask her not to ask me anything. I knew you were going, but lying to your moms is too much. Dre shakes her head with frustration. I hope you know what you're doing, Yaya. We aren't like white girls in the movies who fly off and have adventures. This sounds reckless. I want to agree with her. I do. I even nod. But all I can think is that it seems wild to me that our family would let Bobby fly alone again. As if dying alone wasn't enough. Nah, I don't tell Dre a thing. Not as she helps me clean and collect the condolence cards, as Mommy makes arrangements for the flowers that will never rest at a grave. At one point, Dre holds my hand gently in hers, and it thaws, a part of me I didn't even know had been left cold. A funeral parlor is not a romantic place, or a warm place, or a place to cuddle. especially when it's your own father's death you are there to mourn. But curl into Dre is exactly what I want to do. Can I sleep over later? I ask her, my hand still in hers. She gives it a squeeze. I'd love that, but maybe you should talk to your mom. She seems really upset, and you know how she is about that kind of thing. Mommy hates the concept of sleepovers, says our house has enough beds, and what kind of sheets does someone else have that I cannot sleep in my own? I know what ugly looks like when it departs from your mouth fully formed, how the words can push space between two people, how it's close to impossible to collapse that space. After the viewing, we are in a cab headed back to Morningside, and I'm hoping Mommy does not say anything. But of course, she does utter words. I think we should take a trip. For your birthday. I think we need to get away. Somewhere far, far. He would have wanted you to celebrate. And I don't say my father also would have wanted me at his funeral. She knows this. I understand she's angry at him. I am too. But my father was a man of commemorations. No way he would have wanted to be buried without his child there to make sure they lowered his casket properly. That they laid the bouquet of flowers over his grave with the appropriate amount of respect. And I know my feelings flash across my face. That is the dumbest transition I've ever heard. Who is thinking about a birthday when they're thinking about a funeral? What could I want? That's stupid to think about. I just want to be left alone. And there goes that ugly again, like a picket fence risen between us. We can still see each other, but it's a barrier too high to climb. I tell Mommy I'm sleeping over at Dre's house. I do not ask for permission. And although her jaw tightens, she does not say a word to me. I climb through Dre's window, hauling the duffel I packed. Dre asks me if I told my mother about my plans for the morning. She must feel how I get stiff in her arms, because she turns on her nightlight to look at me. She deserves the truth, Yaya. I don't want to lie. And you know she's going to ask me. Tears prick at my eyes. Everyone spends years, my entire lifetime, lying to me about my family, but I'm the one who supposedly owes people the truth? Dre, I don't want you to lie. Just let me get a head start. I know it seems unsafe, unkind, but I do think it is the right thing for me to do. She doesn't respond. But she turns off the light and holds me close the whole night. I kiss her gently in the morning when it's time for me to leave. 50 days after. At the airport, I stand at the check-in line, trying not to draw attention. I've done the research, and because I'm 16 going on 17, I fly as an adult, not an unaccompanied minor. The only hitch is if they ask for my mother to sign a letter of consent. But I heard this is hit or miss. It just depends on the person checking you in. I tried to get my ticket electronically, but it kept saying error. I am not nervous. I am not nervous. When the man at the desk calls me forward, I hand over my passport without saying a thing. He looks at the picture, then at me. You're underage. Will you have a guardian with you? I shake my head no. He shakes his head sadly. If you were 17, we could waive it. But as it is, panic bubbles in my body. I can't not go. I can't not go. I have to get on this flight. I look the man at the desk straight in the eye. He is youngish. And seems new at his job. I think of the best way to play this and decide to be upfront. I am going to bury my father. My mother didn't know I would need a guardian. I make myself sound confident. I push the next words out. none of them are lies. My father was a passenger on flight 1112. My father died on flight 1112. They're flying his body, what is left of it, out today. It's the first time I've said the words. Although reporters have called the house and it was all over CNN a few weeks ago, this is the first time I have said the words. My father died on flight 1112. For the rest of my life, I will be known by that fact. I wipe at my eyes with the heel of my hand. The man at the desk blinks rapidly. He squints down at my passport. Looks like you'll be 17 soon. And really, the age restriction is more a recommendation than a requirement. He hands me back my passport, prints out a ticket, and circles my gate.
Camino. I start the sancocho while Tia delivers a poultice to a viejita with arthritis. I brown the beef and chicken, peel and chunk of yuca and plantains. This is the stew we make for welcome. And although I don't know if I even want this girl here, it seems the right thing to do. I don't think about the money at the altar. When Tia comes home, I am chopping cilantro. Mashed garlic sits in the mortar. Usually when I cook, it's quick things, pastelitos, bacalao with rice, tostones. But sancocho is a day-long dish to make. It has many steps. It's making a pact with time that you will be patient and the outcome will be delicious. It is browning and boiling, blending and straining. It is meat and root vegetables, herbs and salt. It is hearty and made from the earth and heart. Tia puts her bag away. Turns on the kitchen radio. Xiomara Fortuna's voice bellows out, and soon we are both singing along. If Tia suspects anything, she does not let on. She cuts avocado and puts on a pot of rice. She removes pulp from a chinola for juice. Tia is a tight-lipped woman with few friends. She says she only shares her secrets with the saints. Her silence laid out like a dance floor for magic. Yahaira is on the same flight as Papi's body. I know exactly where she is in the air without having to glance at a clock. I've memorized this route throughout my 16 years. I don't check my tablet. I don't worry about the plane. Of course I worry about the plane. I am sick with worry about a girl I don't know. My hands shake as I wipe down the kitchen counter. I should tell Tia, but I know if I do, she will call Yahaira's mother. And I know if she does that, her mother might learn about the money, might learn what I've been planning. I light a candle at Tia's altar and pray for safe passage and that the crossroads be clear. And then with an hour left of flight time, I make the phone call I've been dreading, but sometimes a girl needs a favor. I spend the entire ride in Don Mateo's car berating myself for agreeing to this Yahaira's crazy plan. My hands are sweating, and it's not because the AC in Don Mateo's car doesn't work. He was gruff as usual when he let me in the car, but I can tell even he's shaken by how eerily familiar this all seems. Last time we did this, it seems like the world ended. I told Don Mateo I need to receive my father's body, not that I was picking up his other daughter. I know he'd have told Tia immediately. We are silent the entire ride. The closer we get to the airport, the more I feel like I might throw up. I try to distract myself with plans for Yahaira. What am I going to do with a sister? She'll have to sleep in my bed. She'll probably have that gringa Spanish and require me to translate for her. She's probably a comparona who will expect me to cook and clean. Well, I will fling her back to the States like a bat out of a cueva if she doesn't act right. I should have never offered to help. It is wrong, I know. My sister is not a comparona. She seems kind and thoughtful. The pain in her eyes is a twin for the ache in mine. I am so afraid of liking her, of wanting her to be my family. My heart cannot afford any more relatives. I've realized too late I've bitten off half the polish on my thumbnail. Now, my manicure looks like un relajo. I try to bite the rest of the polish off so at least my nails will match. But it was a stupid reflex. Now I have 5 fucked up nails instead of 1. Don Mateo pulls the car up to the terminal. But I can't get out. I reach for the handle, but it's like my hand gets stuck there. I can hear my breath shudder in and out of my body, loud in my ears. I can take you back home, Camino. It's okay if I'm a little late for work. I'm sure the officials will understand. I shake my head and roll my shoulders. I've faced worse things than an airport. I've survived worse things than are behind those doors. Thank you, Don Mateo. I'll be okay. He raises his bushy eyebrows and pats me softly on the arm. When I'm at the airport entryway, I stop completely still. My feet feel stuck. The last time I was here was not so long ago. It was a day just like today. It was the day that changed everything. I'm not sure if I can go inside. Although I brace myself, I am not ready for the wave of grief that smacks me in the face as I enter through the airport doors. I immediately find the screen with information. The plane should be landing in 20 minutes. The information is right there with the gate number and everything. There is an excited crowd of folks waiting for family, but none of them are crying. There is no one weeping, no loud upset yelling. The excitement and love and anxiety is like a breathing being in the terminal. I feel like I am trying to reconcile 2 very different pictures. My heart wants to make them whole, but my brain knows my father will not walk through those doors. My brain does not know if my sister will. What if something happens? Take off and landing are the most dangerous parts of flight. Ugh, I want to smack myself for even thinking it. I watch the monitor, counting down the minutes until descent. It feels closer to 20 hours. And then, the board clears. No new information. My hands begin to shake, my breathing uneven. Did something go wrong? Did something happen? I grab a man in an airport uniform, but I can't get out the words to ask him. I simply point up at the board. His annoyance shifts and he gently pats my hand. He must understand what I haven't said. It landed just fine. I think they are simply trying to update the arrival gate. A breath. I didn't know I'd bitten whooshes through my teeth. Before I know it, people trickle out of customs. Everything seems so normal, so unlike 6 weeks ago. They've all moved on, or were never moved in the first place. People, in business suits holding briefcases, tall, shapely women in high heels and bedazzled jeans, grand-looking doñas with mahogany canes and skirt suits. And finally, a beautiful girl with tight curls, a morenita with a pink duffel in her hand, looking pensive and determined. It is almost as if she does not imagine there will be anyone there waiting for her. Her eyes do a sweep of the people, but pass right by me. A second later, she looks back. Tears fill my eyes. I stare at the ceiling lights until the sting recedes. When I look back down, she is standing before me.
Yahaira and Camino. I was never afraid of flying in the past, but today, the rise of the plane made my stomach plunge. I had a middle seat, and the woman beside me kept the window shade open the entire time. I peeked once and saw the huge blue ocean below us. I kept my eyes shut completely after that. Even when the flight attendant asked if I wanted juice, even when the man next to me farted loudly, even when the pilot said we were descending, and there was a moment when the wheels first touched down that my heart plummeted in my chest, but then we were slowing and a smattering of passengers erupted into applause. The old lady in the seat beside me said in Spanish, "They don't do that as much anymore. This must be a plane of Dominicans returning home. When you touch down on this soil, you must clap when you land. Para dar gracias a Dios, regresamos. And I smiled back. Although I've flown in the States for different tournaments, this is my first time in another country. In the airport, the messages are bilingual. The customs line is long, and I scan the form I filled out on the plane with all my information. I pay $10 for a tourist card, and I'm afraid I will be rejected. I answer all the customs agent's questions about where I'm staying and why I am here. Her hard eyes soften a bit when I mention my father's funeral. She scans my passport, and then I am walking through the doors here. I am here. I am here. And then I see that so is she. Camino reaches up and touches my cheek. Te pareces igualito a él. And it's true. I've always favored my father. But so does she. In real life, it's not quite like looking into a mirror. Her eyes are light, a hazel color. Her lashes long. She is supermodel thin where I am curvier. And for a moment, I want to smack her hard. For wearing my face. For looking like a Yahaira light version of me. For so clearly being my father's daughter. And then guilt swamps over me. I am the one he left her for. She said on the video chat he called her India Linda. And I wonder what he saw when he looked at her. Her eyes fill, but I know she won't cry. She seems like the kind of girl who can will her eyes to unmake tears. You look just like him, except your eyes. Papi never knew how to hide what he felt, but you know how to draw down window shades. And I know she means that all the anger I feel is locked inside, that I am blank-faced, the way I was at the chessboard. We look just like him. You must have gotten your coloring from your mother. She nods and sucks in a deep breath, the mention of her mother wiping the softness from her face. She drops her hand. We both take a step back. Without my asking, Camino takes my duffel in hand and swings it onto her shoulder. We leave the coolness of the air conditioning, and I'm immediately swarmed by a heavy humidity and a flurry of movement. All around me, people in slacks and colorful dresses hug, babies cling to their mother's legs, and other teens in shorts and caps walk around selling chiclets gum, green mints. Camino weaves with ease by crying couples and parents toward a slim man leaning against a broke-down car. He has the kind of smile that would have made Papi fidget with his big gold ring. The same ring he said he would plant in the face of any man who messed with his daughter. In other words, he looks like trouble. I don't smile back, and instead stop in my tracks. Is this our taxi? Camino shrugs. The unofficial ones tend to be cheaper. I shake my head at her and weave back toward the taxi line, the one with marked and labeled cars, where an old man with a kind smile helps us with my bag and holds the door open as we climb in. Camino's mouth is in a hard line. I stare at the window as we drive and try to ask Camino about the scenery. She smirks at my Spanish and responds to me in English. I hope my face does not show surprise at her vocabulary and accent. I mean, she sounds like an English professor with her perfect pronunciations, but she must have worked hard to speak so fluently. My Spanish is nowhere near as good, and it's my first language. I feel like I am losing to my sister, and it's only the opening. The cab driver slows the car in front of an aqua house with a fenced-in front porch. Before Camino can reach into her wallet, I thrust some dollar bills at the driver. I'm hoping this will make Camino feel better. I don't need her to pay. But instead, she makes a sound low in her throat and hops out the car without a word. It seems my money offends her. There is a woman hunched over a side garden, pulling up some greens by the roots. I cannot imagine my father in this little cozy house. He was a man who loved his luxuries, and this is a barrio house. A nice barrio house, but a barrio nonetheless. Stray dogs walking the streets, garbage piling into the gutters, mud stretching up the stone walls enclosing the casita. My father would have hated getting his freshly waxed shoes dirty. The tiny woman by the garden straightens up, and when she glances at me, all the herbs she'd been picking fall from her hand. She is staring at me, I think, until I realize she is staring beyond me. Camino, muchacha del carajo, what have you done? Camino's tia Solana's body shakes as she hugs me, and I lean into the arms and warmth of this woman who is a stranger. I want to ask her so many questions, but her eyes are wet when she pulls back, and I realize I want to fight her for what are actually my father's sins. Where is your mother, niña? I glance at Camino, who indicates with a shrug that I am entirely on my own. I rub my earlobe. Camino's tía takes a hard look at her before she guides me into the house as if I am a fragile old woman. She seats me at the small round table in the living room. She sets a bowl of sancocho before me with a plate of concon. Tell me the whole story, but first, eat what your sister made for you. I am helping Camino pick herbs for tea. The act of picking the fresh leaves reminding me of Dre. The mangy dog that sits outside the gate sniffs the metal bars from where he sits. Camino opens it for him, and he settles quietly into a patch of weeds. Does that dog follow you everywhere? I ask her. I do not tell her Papi did not let us have a dog, despite how much I begged, or even as Mommy argued it'd be good for me. No, Viralata doesn't really leave his spot near the house. He won't go that way, she gestures to the right. It leads to a busy street. He got hit by a car once, and I think it made him shy of too many vehicles. He likes it here, because the neighborhood kids leave him scraps, and Tia's little fruit trees offer shade. The man next door, Don Mateo, built a little doghouse on raised legs for him to climb into if the water rises. But I notice that when Camino goes to close the gate, and it seems she's turning left, the dog stands at alert, wagging his short stubbed tail. Camino catches my raised brow and laughs. Oh yes, if I'm going in that direction, he sometimes follows. He loves the beach. He likes to chase the salty air as I swim. When we are riled up, the beach soothes us both, doesn't it, Latita? She is gentle with the dog, and I have to look away from the tenderness. Through the gate, I see a tall man standing across the street, but what brings goosebumps to my skin is the way he's watching Camino, like he wishes he were the dog beneath her hand, like he would love to sink his teeth into her. I turn to point him out, but by the time she follows my whispered words and pointed finger, the man is already gone.
The night is not over before the house phone rings. Yahaira and Tia sit on the couch like old girlfriends, and I know my alo is laced with salt. A woman speaks rapidly, and I only catch that she wants to speak to Yahaira. She sounds exactly how I imagined, my father's other woman to sound. High maintenance, demanding, una chica plástica all the way through. I pass the cordless phone and Yahaira raises a brow. The woman is yelling before she gets the receiver up to her ear. Tia pats Yahaira softly on her back and I just can't. This girl needs no sympathy. At least she has a mother. At least she has choices. She has been well-fed her whole life. She is clearly loved. I bet you no one ever forgot her birthday. And given the burial plans and Yahaira's arrival, I'm sure Tia has forgotten that in a few days it will be mine. I try and fight back the bitterness. I know better. But it also feels like my life is a careening motoconcho on a rain-slick road, rushing, rushing toward something bigger and madder.
51 days after. Mommy is on her way to DR tomorrow, and she is pissed. Apparently, she knocked on the Johnson's door, panicked, thinking something had happened. And when Dr. Johnson asked Dre, she stayed quiet for as long as she could before she broke down and told the truth. Honestly, I'm surprised Dre waited that long, that she didn't call Mommy as soon as my plane took off. Maybe she realizes there are other shades besides black and white. But even as Mommy yells at me over the phone, all I can feel is the sweetest relief. No one can force me to go back home. The funeral is in 3 days, after the remains are cleared at customs and delivered here to this house. 3 days to figure out my sister, my father, myself. Do you believe in ghosts?
What kind of question is that?
I don't know. It's just that...
Of course I believe in ghosts. There are spirits everywhere.
You for real?
Anyone who says otherwise es un come mierda.
Mommy doesn't believe in ghosts.
Maybe you don't have them in New York City.
So you think Papi's ghost will live in DR?
I think his ghost will live wherever we carry him.
Can a ghost be in two places at once?
Definitely, if it's Papi's ghost.
Papi's ghost would have had a lot of practice. 52 days after. It has been a whole day where I wait for Mommy to arrive and get to know my sister's aunt, who insists I call her my aunt, and watch my sister pretend she isn't watching me. Nothing is familiar. Not the whirring ceiling fan or the loud generator. Not the neighbors who keep coming by to hug Camino and reminisce about Papi. The Dominican Republic is like everything I imagined and beyond anything I could have pictured. I am awakened from the bed I share with Camino by a fruit cart guy yelling, "Mango, aguacate, tomate." On the porch, when I'm rocking in the chair, I watch little pink and green salamanders run up the blue walls. I have never seen so much color. Every house its own watercolor painting. The papaya Tia Solana cuts for breakfast is tender between my teeth. I take picture after picture on my phone, sending everything to Dre. I cannot imagine having grown up here. Cannot understand how my father flipped himself back and forth. Tia Solana tells Camino she should show me her beach, and Camino flinches as if someone raised a hand to hit her. I pretend not to notice, but she must see the way my face falls, because when Tia Solana turns her back, Camino leans to me. The beach isn't safe. There's this guy who hangs out there. I don't think he would be very nice for either of us to see. It's the first time I've seen Camino be anything but sure. The way she bites on her lower lip and won't look me in the eye. I think I know what kind of guy Camino must be describing. And I tell her so, how we have disrespectful dudes in NYC too. As soon as the words are out of my mouth, Camino moves away from me, making a noise of disgust deep in her throat. You think you know so much, Yahaira, but what you know wouldn't sweeten a cup of tea. She huffs off toward the patio, and I wonder what she means and where she learned to judge so harshly someone she barely just met.
I know I was harder on Yahaira than I should have been. But she shows up after I've lived a whole life and wants to pretend we have so much in common. She can't possibly have known anyone or any situation like El Cero. She has no idea what it means to completely abandon your dreams. She cannot. Because it seems what everyone has known but me is that I won't be a doctor. I won't ever be anything more than a girl from a small barrio who helps her aunt with herbs. And that might be the whole of my life. And that will have to be enough. Isn't that what makes a dream a dream? You wake up eventually. But that girl? That girl gets to keep living in the clouds.
When Mommy pulls up to the house driving a tiny Prius, the first thing I notice is how hard her hands are clutching the steering wheel. I did not even know Mommy had a license, much less that she would use it. I try not to flinch and grab Camino, although I'm nervous. Mommy gets out of the car with only a purse, but I see a suitcase in the back. She rushes out the car, leaving the driver's door open. She runs to me, pulls me into a tight, tight hug. And I know I scared her. I wish I could tell her that I scared myself. Beside me, Camino is unmoving, as if made of marble. My mother steps back from me and runs hands down her jeans. She kisses Camino's aunt hello. And I realized then they would have met before. Ma was Camino's mother's friend. She's probably even been to this house. Theirs is an awkward greeting. And then she takes a long, hard look at Camino. And I can see in her eyes that she sees how much we look alike. This girl who could have sprung from her body. How much we look like Papi. Both of us looking like we could have sprung from his. She takes a deep breath. So do I. I do not know how Mommy will greet Camino. I do not know what she is feeling in this moment. I want to make the moment easy, but don't know how. Mommy takes the decision from me. She leans in and kisses the air near Camino's cheek. It's nice to meet you, Camino. I know you don't know me, and it's small consolation, but your father loved you very much. Mommy and Tia Solana sit inside the little house. Camino and I rock in the chairs on the tiny porch. It's strange to be outside, but still be barred in. The wicker rocking chair bites into my thighs. The stars overhead are scattered rhinestones glued onto the night's deep, dark fabric. Camino passes me a cigar she's been smoking. I take a small puff and immediately start coughing. She laughs and roughly rubs circles on my back. That thing does not taste as good as it smells. Just breathe, Yaya. It'll ease up. And from somewhere I didn't know existed, the phrase spells itself in smoke, in Papi's voice, just breathe, negra, just breathe. Pain yawns open inside my chest. A wail pulls up from my mouth, the sob barreling past my lips and pulling an army of tears with it. I can't stop. My body heaves in the rocking chair, and Camino rubs my back in small, small circles. Just breathe, Yaya. I see. And through the screen of my tears, I see her own eyes are full, ready to cry. But maybe I'm just imagining it.
I have never been an older sister to anyone. I didn't even grow up with one of the strays. The chickens we killed were for food and ceremonies, and I didn't name or coddle even one of them. So it is a strange feeling that's being tattooed on my heart. This need to comfort my crying, sad sister. What do I know about providing comfort? Of making myself a place of solace? And yet it seems I know a lot because Yaya folds herself into my arms and wets my blouse with her sniffles. And I don't even want to smack her across the back of her head for ruining one of my good shirts.
53 days after. Camino and I walk a long ways to a river the next day, and I wonder at how our father split himself and his love and implanted us each with something of him, because the girl swims like a dolphin while I plop around in the water, holding on to big rocks and kicking my feet. And I feel competitive for a second, want to tell Camino I would dust her on the chessboard if she played. But I know this is petty. Swimming seems like therapy to Camino. Her shoulders drop, her skin glows. It is the closest to happy I've seen her since getting here. On the other hand, chess has never been stress relief for me. Chess is the definition of stress itself. My mind wrestling with every possibility and outcome. My thumb war with the pieces, trying to decide where they should land, does not seem half as smooth as Camino's backstroke. I push onto my back and float downstream. It is hard to remind myself I am not playing against my sister. We are on the same team, I tell myself, even if I don't actually believe that. 54 days after. The ceremony we had for Papi in New York is nothing compared to what is planned in DR. Tia and Camino arrange an entire party. Mommy looks on disapprovingly as a band of men in white show up with drums and tambourines, and it's a good thing the gravesite isn't too far from the church because dozens and dozens of people show up until we are a blur, a smudge of people dressed like ash advancing down the street. I borrowed a light-colored dress from Camino, and we walk down the street arm in arm. People sing songs I don't know. I think Papi would have loved us making such a fuss. At the gravesite, the casket is lowered, the earth again welcoming a song home. Mommy heaves as if she will jump in. The caoba trees bow low, the wood gleams. Words intoned, I lick sweat off my lip. Tia rocks back and forth, I cannot hold her. My sister grasps my hand. I feel her squeeze and do not let go. Hold tight. The ground ruptured. My father's body fills the hole. Dirt is thrown on the casket, filled up and made whole again, but not the same. Tia Solana begins the novena, the 9 days of prayer, immediately after the body is lowered into the ground. Mommy sits in a corner of the house, not praying, not moving. Tears steadily fall down her cheeks, but not a single sob pushes forth from her mouth. I touch her shoulder once, but she is holding vigil. I can't imagine how difficult it must be for her to be here, all the painful memories she must have, all the ones she will have after today. I try not to feel guilt for having made her face this, but it still twists me up to see how hard it is for her to look at this house, to speak to these neighbors, to imagine this life my father had. People come from all over to feast on the food we spent yesterday cooking, to pull rosary beads through their fingers and usher my father's spirit into heaven. And I wonder where his spirit has been this whole time, if only now is when we are all officially praying for him. Has he been here? Has he been here this whole time? Has he watched us wrestle with the gift and curse he left behind?
After the novena, all the neighbors fill plates of food. Everyone but Yahaira's mommy eats. She sits by the window, staring at absolutely nothing. Even Viralata is chewing a bone out back. I walk over to her, but stop before I speak. I know I am hovering, I am so unsure of myself around this woman who probably wishes I had never been born. As if she hears my thought, she turns and pins me with her gaze. I noticed you were rubbing a hand on your chest, and Yahaira told me you've lost weight, I say. Her eyes fly to her daughter, who is listening to old Juanita tell one of her elaborate stories. I force myself to rush on. I don't want to seem like I'm sucking up to her. It's just so clear she's in pain. It hurts me to watch it. It reminds me of my own. It's just all studies show these are signs of high stress. The aches, the loss of